Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast, a football fans podcast and the people behind CelticUnderground.net. What a week this has been in Scottish football and what a week this has been for Celtic. We have had the return tie in Valencia where it looked like we finally got our tactics right until a player was sent off for an away game in Europe. And then we had, before that, the last-minute winner against Kilmarnock. Wider afield in Scottish football, that last-minute winner against Kilmarnock prompted a statement from Kilmarnock. It's statement o'clock in Scottish football. Statement from Kilmarnock about the Celtic supporters. One bit understandable, because only a diddy chucks a coin. But the other bit, if you look at the photos, the broken seats are actually all warped forward. So it's more of a health and safety issue about stadium infrastructure and maintenance that nobody has then turned around to Kilmarnock about. Anyway, it was worthwhile making a statement about the broken seats in rows 6, 7 and 8. And then we had, to quote Sky, an astonishing statement from Steve Clarke, where he makes the astonishing statement that Scotland is a bit backward and parochial and still has a number of people who are obsessed with abusing people based on their religious beliefs. I know, who'd have thought it? Anyway, we have then had lots of hand-wringing and Barry Ferguson coming out and talking about the, I mean, really tear-jerking moment where he talks about the having to explain to his kids why he's called an orange bee. And of course, that was accompanied by a photo of Barry with his kids wearing scarves, which have anti-Catholic slogans and praise of an Ulster terrorist on them. Great. And interspersed with that, we had the Rangers making a statement about how it's all sports scene's fault that they win games with players who should have been sent off and then are subsequently banned. And then we have Jim Traynor also made a statement about how he said some pure dead brilliant stuff for Abers and the BBC cut it out. So, in tribute to the parochial nature of Scottish football, we have a new feature for the podcast. Before we get into the meat and bones of St Anthony and Andy Riley, we have Statement of the Week. So first up on Statement of the Week, we have Kilmarnock, who made a statement because a number of Chadwick and Moffat seats, stand seats, were damaged or broken while some Celtic supporters invaded the field of play and confronted our players. We condemn all of these incidents in the strongest possible terms and reiterate that the safety of all players, staff and supporters is paramount at all times. Under SPFL Rule H40, Celtic FC will be required to pay for the damage caused to the rugby park seats. Well, Kilmarnock, as Jabberjaw will review and assess whether that's the statement of the week. You've got some tough competition. However, we'd like to point out that if you look at the pictures, all of those seats are warped going in the same direction, i.e. it's celebrating supporters moving forward. And if you're interested in the health and safety of your supporters, maybe when we turn up to seats that a stand that has been used for some time, they shouldn't be rusted to buggery and covered in bird shit. Anyway, there's a wider issue here, but we'll move on to the next statement.
I've heard this expression, trial by TV, trial by sports scene, and that certainly seems to be the way it's going.
Yes, it was the comment by Rangers chief executive Stuart Robertson that the whole problem for Rangers is not the fact that players are dirty, it's not that McGregor slides out with a straight leg, stud showing at kneecap high, or that Fredo Morelos goes around kicking people, or that referees don't see things in a game or see things wrongly in the game and then they're corrected, like the Kilmarnock keeper being sent off or Kilmarnock not getting a penalty. It's none of those things at all. It is purely because the BBC hate Rangers. They hate them. And there's trial by sports scene. And what happens is sports scene just get together. They don't show highlights of any other team's games. They just show Rangers highlights and then say, aren't they bad guys? And then give them to the SFA or the referees a panel, and they just pick only on Rangers incidents. So there's Stuart Robertson. Longer interview, you can go on YouTube and listen to it if you can be asked. So there's his statement that it's trial by sports scene, and that's the only reason the Rangers are a dirty football team.
I did it, but I pointed out that I would list examples of where the BBC had been less than fair and even accurate. in the reporting of Rangers affairs and even some matches. They said they would include that. None of that saw the light of day, so that's why I felt it was necessary to do this interview, just to let Rangers fans know.
So this one is a personal statement from Jim Traynor to some Rangers thing, where following the It's All Sports Scene's Fault stuff, he then had an interview, apparently, on Reporting Scotland, I think it was, and he's been criticised by the Bears because he looked like a diddy. Now, obviously, Jim, he's a bit naive in the media world, doesn't really know much about the media or anything. Mm-hmm. So, apparently, Jim then went on to let the Huns know that he did put up a good fight and he really showed them, by the way, big man. Problem was, the big nasty BBC caught him unawares and cut out all the cracking bits. So, we have the Kilmarnock statement. Celtic fans threatened our players and that's why we lost the game and our stadium's fallen to bits, so we're going to get Celtic to pay for it. Statement number one. Next bit was Stuart Robertson and the, well, It's All Sports Scene's Fault. We are not a dirty team. Followed by Jim Traynor with, I did stand up for the club, but the BBC cut it out. So who's going to win our first statement of Jabberjaw, first statement of the week award? And as I'm sure you appreciate, it's really named after the guy. Jabber wins. Jabber Traynor wins the Jabberjaw Award for Statement of the Week. Well done, Jim Traynor. So you enjoyed Statement of the Week. There'll be more along always, as we always say. Anyway, enough of me. We've got a new podcast guest this week, and it is Andy Riley. He's chatting with St Anthony. You may see sometimes their Bard Exchange on Twitter. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, passing over to him. St Anthony with him, Andy Riley.
Welcome to another Celtic Underground podcast. I'm delighted to have a new person on the podcast tonight that we've not had on before, and he is Andy Riley. So, hello to Andy.
Hi there.
Now, as always, we're going to ask Andy, what was his first Celtic game and who was your first Celtic hero?
The first game, it had been a home game against Motherwell. I'm not going to lie, I don't recall the game. It had been about 1984, 1985 type thing. My dad clearly states, game against Motherwell, took me to the main stand. It wasn't really until the end of the 84-85 season that I can remember games and kind of parts of them. Celtic hero at that time, I mean, not to sound like a childish fanboy, but all of them. I mean, a lot of the time, because you're behind the goal, Pat Bonner, because he was the closest guy to you, you know, at the Celtic end. Paul McStay.
I thought you were going to say Mo.
If you let me run through the list, I mean, again, we've spoke a few times on Twitter. As much as we all kind of, he's now person non grata, at the time he was also great. And I think anybody says, I mean, some people did prefer McLaren, some people maybe did see through him or didn't like his personality.
The mere intelligence of the support, like McLaren, I have to say, like myself.
I loved every day as a kid, but there's no way I can look back at that and say I never liked him, I was too cool for school. He was great. He scored some big goals. He's also a flash personality, mm-hmm. which is a, you know, as a child at that time, you see that and he looks up. I mean, again, we've spoke loads of times the following season, the 85-86, as much as we talk about, you know, the Love Street, the 1-0 win at Pittodrie, mm-hmm. where he scored. You know, and the amount of things I remember about that day.
Which is the fact he scored that day, it was a belter.
Oh, it was great. I mean,
you know, he turned the defender in the area and he cracked into the net, yeah. only one goal, but it was terrific.
Yeah, you know, he had a goal chopped off, which was almost equally as good, and again for...
And then he scored the goal at Love Street. I know the build-up was tremendous, but to get it in the end of that and finish it, it was magnificent.
Still my favourite Celtic goal of all time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, it now slightly great, so it was him who put the ball in the back of the net, but... Starting from, you know, the ball in our box, and what, you know, it's not just, you know, we played our way out. You get Danny McGrain overhead kick. You get nutmegs up the line, just the pace and the move. Mm-hmm. And even now, when you look back, you know, Danny McGrain jumping up and down, celebration as the ball goes into the back of the net. A wonderful goal, and I don't think we deserve to have that taken away from us.
No, just because of what he did. He's possibly tarnished the memory slightly, because you're right, but I think as time goes on now, that the whole Mo Johnson scenario set Celtic back, I reckon it set us back about 5 years, and I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah.
Because that normally what was it, the fact that we lost a good player, it was a psychological advantage that they gained, and the fact that he did quite well for them for a period as well, that killed us, you know, like psychologically, the supporters, the board, Billy McNeil was devastated.
Yeah.
It took a long time to recover from it, but I think when you look at where we are now, where they are, what they injured in the last 5-6 years, and we have the ascendancy now, so it's possibly easier to now to look at it and think, I can see it in the correct vein again, whereas for a few years it did rankle.
Oh, it still annoys me. If you catch me in the wrong moment, as I say, I've told this story a few times. My family was on holiday, Porto Polenta. Me and my dad were walking up from the beach, and we walked past the shop now. I think it's at Mallorca. It's the Daily Bulletin. Mm-hmm. It's the English language newspaper. And we're walking by, and you see the whirligig spinner type thing. And the headline was "Rangers Sound Catholic," and it's like, wow, right, my dad's like, oh, we're buying this.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw, and my dad walked up, turned it over. You know, and maybe by the passage of time, I'm now telling this, but you know, he lost his tan instantly, went chalk white in the picture. And the picture was, it was Johnston in his Watford strip, but you knew fine well who it was. I think that's still somewhere in my dad's house.
I know you're a music fan, right? So this fits in sort of music cross football. At that period, that just before he signed, somebody bought me the NXS album. I think it was, is it Kick?
Yeah,
the classic one, the one with the hits on it, and I remember playing it constantly. And do you know, when after he signed, I equate that album with Mo Johnson signing, and to this day, I don't like listening to some NXS songs. Just bring it back.
I mean, I don't have that memory, but to this day, I don't listen to any NXS songs either, so I've no problems with it.
You don't like NXS?
I think they're not for me. I mean, again, they were like the guitar pop band. Of the time, not quite for me.
That's right, fine. So now that we've established your credentials as a Celtic fan, we'll move on to discussing current affairs. But we're going to have a wee resume of what's happened since the new year.
Yep.
I was quite apprehensive getting into the new year, because obviously we lost 1-0 at Ibrox. Things weren't going great. The our away form had they been good. But when you look at the domestic form, that's like 8 games in a row without losing a goal, winning every game. But what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, going into the break, if you went to an international break, you know, of 15 days, and you've not won, it's annoying. Get into this 3-week period where we'd lost to them, it wasn't even a loss, it was such a terrible performance.
It was a manner of defeat, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that was the sickening thing about it. You just thought there was, you know, we could have been beat by a lot more. So to go into that, January's a bit of a grim time, the best of times anyway. Mm. You've also then got the transfer window opening, which is just a mad time on social media or sites like Kerrydale Street or Huddle Board, just everyone shouting angry at each other and not taking anything in. So, yeah, I mean, I always enjoy, whether it's international break or the pre-season or the winter break, I enjoy like the first week, 10 days, the first half of it. I think it's good to get a break, trying to get all that game.
Recharge the batteries.
Yeah, shut off, do other things. And then by halfway through, you're itching to get back. But there was a slight bit of apprehension about it. Now, the fixtures obviously fell well for us in the start of the break. Now, obviously, we got a home cup tie, that's fortunate. The rest of it was kind of rearranged games or games that we were due. Now, obviously, part of the problem, the first half of the season looked so bad, was our away form's been poor and we'd played more away games than home games. Now, again, over the course of a season, that should balance out depending on how the split goes. So we had these home games to play anyway and balance it out. We played well enough in all the games. I think we kind of, you know, we brought in players, brought in the loan players. They all seemed to settle quickly. You know, maybe not all at the same time. I think kind of, you know, people are quick to criticise Ollie Burke in one game, then Halem was a genius. The other is maybe the opposite with Timo Weah. Made an immediate impact. Then the next game, it was, oh, is he kind of, and they came through. Then by the time, you know, all the home games were good, but like we kind of said, I mean, you were saying the St Johnstone game is the first proper test, and I mean, I didn't disagree with that, but if we'd lost or dropped points in any of the home games, it would have been a test.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't dismiss them. Whilst we kind of say, yeah, the game's worked well for us, we still had to go out and win. We still had to kind of...
Oh, definitely.
That was great. The St Johnstone game, I mean, we stuck at it.
One at McDermott?
Yeah, sorry. Mm. I mean, because, yeah, we played them three times, sorry. The St Johnstone away game. I mean, I don't think we played okay in the first half. In the second half, the game got a bit more open, and we actually played better in the second half, but we probably gave up a few more breakaways. I mean, it's not as if, I mean, apart from the 5 minute spell against Airdrie, Scott Bain's not been troubled that much.
Well, ironically, Airdrie was the lowest standard of opposition, who probably gave us the stiffest test at home in some ways.
That'd have been rustiness for us coming back. I don't have a problem with that.
I know.
Easing in. So, yeah, and then, you know, we kept at it. A couple of injuries, a couple of really bizarre non-penalty calls from Colm. Yep. Which, if you think back to, not to derail the comment here, but when you think the penalties we got given against us at Pittodrie Colm, and then the penalties we didn't get at McDermott Park, that's where I struggle to comprehend things. Because if you're a bad ref, you should be a bad ref for both teams. But let's not get derailed with that. We got the goals. We got the away win, and I was kind of thinking, right, by that time you're getting into cliches, let's just take one game at a time. It was slightly weird because we had St Johnstone so many times. Maybe got a bit lucky with the Hibs situation, because if Neil Lennon had been boss,
well, I don't have any doubt different. Hibs would have had more fire in them, but I think of all the teams we've played in the last couple of seasons, in my mind, Hibs have been the most impressive. Under Lennon, they gave us some really, really difficult games. Even games we were winning, it was a hard shift.
Against us, absolutely. I mean, when Hibs first came up under Lennon, I said, before the season started, I went, over the course of this season, they'll beat Rangers, they'll take points off us, but they'll also lose to Hamilton.
Well,
and they did that in the first quarter.
Traditionally, that was always Hibs' problem. You know, they could turn it on in their day against the top teams, and then the next week they would fall on their face against relegation material.
I think all teams can do that. I think, especially the playing Celtic or old Rangers, new Rangers, the extra energy and work they put in, it maybe means they're come down or they're tired or, you know, if players at that level were playing consistently week in, week out, they'd probably have a bigger club. And I also think Neil Lennon gets the biggest and best results from his team by working them so hard that really impressing how important it is to win this game, but then in other games you'll go easy. I mean, there's an argument that the manager and team that beats Barcelona shouldn't draw with Arbroath in the same 6 week period.
Well, I was going to say that just after that we beat Barcelona, we get beat 2-0 in McKillie on the Sunday, and it was a shocking performance
again. But that season, obviously the circumstances of the season's helped, isn't that? But Neil Lennon, that campaign, definitely thought, let's give Europe everything.
Yeah.
And he accepted we're going to drop points in the league. Now, you can't publicly say that, obviously.
I know.
But some of the performances, you know, say the Killy loss, first time in over 50 years they'd won at Celtic Park, I think. And, you know, Inverness, definitely a St Johnstone draw, I remember as well. You know, the Arbroath one. Even the...
Well, there was a few howlers. It was only after the new year, domestically, that we got into our stride.
We settled it. Again, the following season, I think maybe because he realised the writing was on the wall with Europe, or the squad wasn't big enough, or he doubted maybe we'd be able to do that 2 years in a row. He went the other way. He prioritised the league. I think we only lost one game all season, one up at Aberdeen. And in Europe, we just never competed. Oh, we weren't competitive enough. So, yeah, I mean, again, you know, I know you've got big squads, but, you know, and your best players, but we're playing over 60 games. I think, unfortunately, you've got to accept there's highs and lows. You're hoping the squad can come in and kind of do their job. But with Neil Lennon, I felt it was hard. I always kind of felt, and this is no offence to any of the players, but I always kind of felt if Dylan McGeoch was playing or somebody similar, it was going to be a lesser team in attitude and performance. you know, obviously Dylan McGeoch, the game against St Mirren, he was brilliant, scored at there. They really looked.
There was
the
a
goal,
few boys at that time. I remember Darnell Fisher was breaking through as well, and I felt like that as well. Somehow, when you heard one or two of the boys were playing, that there was a worry that the team might not be up to the standard of the performance that we hoped to be. But that's nothing against them.
No, again, and the only way.
Liam Henderson and all, I think Liam Henderson was there at that time as well. Yep. So
the only way players are going to learn is by getting into the team and playing. And I don't think you probably don't help them as much when you make six changes. You know, you're always kind of. If Soluska comes in, you're slightly worried that a start.
Yeah. But get back to us then. Yeah. So we've came through that wee spell. We've done as well as we all hoped.
Yep.
I think that the hope we all had after the new year was that we would hit the ground running. We would win these games, and the hope would be that Rangers would drop points, and so it's materialised.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even kind of get into the Kamalnock game, you know, according to the week, you know, before the Saturday games, a lot of people, I mean, it's easy to slag Hugh Keevans and fun, but, you know, he was kind of saying, by Saturday night, Rangers were 3 points behind, Celtic would get a really tough game.
That's right.
And Kamalnock, yeah, by the end of the weekend, we're 8 points clear. And, you know, I know, and immediately from going, it could have been a situation where we could have been under great pressure to now get the stage where half the people are just saying, that's it, league's done, league's over. I mean, that could easily change again.
We need to be careful, and the reason why I say that is that I always try and tell people who maybe don't remember, that I remember the summer of 1997 quite vividly. We were in a terrible state.
Yeah.
And there was no way in my mind's eye at that point I could see us winning the league, and yet somehow all the stars are, you know, arranged in the sky, and everything came together eventually, and we did do it. So that's why I always say, but you should own your guard, because you never know what's in the corner.
We've won leagues from bigger deficits. We've thrown away bigger gaps.
I know.
Win the league. I don't know when this is going out, but obviously it's been recorded a week before we go to Tynecastle.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me is thinking, right, let's get that over and done with.
Mm-hmm.
But then the next game is. Next game, obviously, it's Hibs away in the Cup. And you're thinking, well, it's a different tournament. But we'll see how that affects us.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the next league game after that, I'm thankful we've got a blank midweek for once.
But we need to get back into the mindset of teams are fair to play us. Because I do think before the new year there was a wee element, you know, amongst teams like Hearts, for example, and Aberdeen, that they were keen to get at us. Whereas in the last couple of seasons, they've been terrified of playing us. Because we were seen as being weaker than what we've been the last few seasons, for whatever reason. And when you're seeing we're going to Tynecastle and Easter Road, we're actually owed a performance in the two grounds, because the last 18 months or so, there's been two at Tynecastle and two at Easter Road that were murder. It wasn't a case of them beating us, it was a case of we just didn't turn up.
No, absolutely. Again, I certainly think, kind of, obviously the Invincible season we went for it and we kept up. Last season was certainly the case where Brendan was picking and choosing games. I think the Tynecastle one, we just ran out of steam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we lost the goal. If we got an equaliser at some point, we'd have probably been okay.
Mm.
But, you know, sometimes when you lose the plot, it just goes feet and you get games like that.
Mm.
The first game we lost in almost 70 games,
you've just
got to say, you know, not to be Tony Mowbray, take it in the chin.
If you're going to lose it, you lose it spectacularly. I think that was always going to be the case.
We were so open in that game. But, I mean, it's probably the Easter Road games. I mean, even kind of the. So we drew 2-2 when we were 2-0 up.
Mm. We blew it that day.
And we ended up clinging on.
Mm-hmm.
But then equally, we missed Sittles.
Sinclair could have won it at the end. He missed a right good chance.
Yep. The game we lost post split. Yeah, I don't know how motivated we were to win.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, we could have won the league that day.
But McGinn scored for Hibs.
I'm not sure. We lost 2-1. Edward scored late on.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, we knew fine well if we lost that, we could win the league the following week against Rangers. You worried about that. The game in December, I'm not saying this with hindsight, I did say pre-game, I generally don't think we had the players to play three at the back.
The team lineup was a shambles. I mean, for some reason, they played Sinclair wide right that day, and he just looked lost.
And I mean, if we're talking about players over the last 10 years, I love Izaguirre. I love a Celtic attacking fullback.
Yeah,
I think that's part of the way we should play. But, you know, 18 months ago, we were all quite happy to see him go. You know, He went for a fancy pleasure. It wasn't a nasty get him out the door, but it was it's moved for the best. So to then bring him back in, I think obviously because his defensive work, even when he was brilliant, could be suspect at times. To go this far down the line and just bring players in from out the cold and drop them into a formation that we hadn't played all that, I don't think Hibs could believe themselves. No. He just walks up the park and scored and had the run of the park for
us. That was another game, it could have been heavier, so it could have.
Yeah.
You know, we got away with something that day. So let's move on to the new signings then, because the one good thing about the transfer window is we brought in much needed reinforcements.
Yeah.
Fresh blood, because we were very stale before the winter break. And, you know, we brought in a number of players, but the four main ones, and we'll go through them. So the first guy is the new right back on loan for Borussia Dortmund, who the guy who sits in front of me at Celtic Park keeps calling Tojan, right? So I would imagine the pronunciation is Tojan.
Yeah, probably. So I'm not going to throw anybody up for pronunciation, so I'm not worrying about that.
He keeps calling Tojan or Tojan. So anyway, what's your first impressions? I mean, he's got maybe six games under his belt now.
Yeah, I mean, first impressions were great. I think in the aftermath of the Kelly game, he's taken a lot of criticism.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was okay at Rugby Park. I didn't think he was that bad. Again, I mean, we needed a right back. I think maybe common to what we said about Isaac Guerri. Most people love Lustig, but in big games, when he's put under pressure, he's been troubled for a while. You know, like the big games, the big goals we've lost this season, the goals against AEK Athens, the goal at Ibrox, it came from his side, it came from him being done or not managing to block crosses and stuff. I mean, he still shows he can in certain games get up and down, he does get involved, but we've had to move him out. So getting somebody else in, and when Tojan came on at half time at McDermott Park, he got done. The first challenge he went for, the boy done him, and you're thinking, you know, it was a sharp intake of breath, but he caught him at that point and he got the ball back, and his defensive work second half of that game was solid, but he's overlapping and cutting the space, and the amount of times he worked a really cute ball that goes in between the fullback and the centre half, I mean, that looks brilliant. And if you do it, if your fullback gets it and cuts it back, and he got one and he cut it back, and we're quite unlucky not to score. Obviously, he got an assist in the, was it the Hibs game, I guess? He got an assist in one of the home games, and yeah, I think he's looked solid. Again, he's somebody who I believe hasn't played a lot of football since before he came to us. He's now kind of played, you know, after coming out at half time, every minute.
Yeah.
You know, playing in that concrete park on Sunday as well. And he got done a few times. He maybe wasn't as good.
I think what was noticeable in Sunday was that the amount of players who misjudged passes or miscontrolled the ball.
Yeah.
Right? And I would never ever criticise him playing on that surface. Because I think that's unfair, because it's not a true surface that professional footballers should be playing on.
Yeah, I mean, if he's been coming, I don't know the quality of surfaces in the Bundesliga, but they're probably not like that, are they? He's probably not used to that. I mean, we've got a psychological block, I think, about the plastic pitches at times. To get that win, it's just absolutely brilliant. You know,
it was all about getting the 3 points in the day. So moving on to Ollie Burke. I think we knew of Ollie Burke because he played with Scotland, and he's quite high profile in this country.
People watching the national team might know him,
Well, on the television, certainly, but the point I'm making is he wasn't a huge surprise, you know. But having said that, I don't think, playing wise, we knew a great deal about his style. And it's interesting that a guy who came with a reputation for being a wide man has played through the middle.
We've had a few wide men in our time. I mean, I think obviously Edwards' injury and Bayo not being able to play in obviously the Lee Griffiths situation has probably forced the manager's hand with Burke. I don't know if he was intended to be brought in as a winger, or if Brendan's always thought, I will play him through the middle. I like him. I think he's kind of
I mean, what was that run he went near the end in Sunday?
They went up the line.
He must have ran 80 yards up the park, and he was still full of steam when he got into their area. I mean, I think that's an indication if you could get him in the wing and let him run into open space, I don't think MD's catching him. He looked sensational.
I mean, there's certain times you kind of worry about us forwards having, you know, reliant on pace, or that's our main game. A lot of times we don't get space to run into.
But,
you know, wide as opposed to through the middle, it might be better. I mean, his pace and his strength are
frightening. He scored a few goals as well for a guy who's maybe not a, you know, he's not a natural goal scorer. That's maybe not his game, but he certainly pitched in.
If you're up front for us and you're getting chances, I mean, obviously the Hibs goal was a big deflection, but again, he's worked the channel, he's got the ball, he's took in his run. I think he'll have a big impact for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
No, I'm quite happy about that. But there is some games, I mean, a shout out to one of my friends who I'll not name here, but you'll know who it was. He sent me a message on the winning games. Is it just me, or can, you know, Ollie Burke not play football? You thought his technical skills were quite poor. And then by the time we played St Johnson in the cup, in the home game,
he's converted.
Within 10 minutes, he's like, well, he's made a right fool out of me, hasn't he?
I know. Well, yeah. Listen, it's easy done. First impressions aren't always the best ones. You should certainly give guys a handful of games before you judge them.
But,
so that brings us on to Weir.
Yep.
Right, because if Ollie Burke is maybe his technical skills aren't the best, then Weir certainly looks as if he's got great technique.
Well, I've really enjoyed him winding up Kilmarnock players. That's a big plus for me. So
somebody must have said something to that boy, because that's not his game. I was actually, at the time, I thought maybe somebody had said something racist.
I'm not going to jump to that conclusion, but he was kicked and battered about. And it was one of the ones you can see in the highlights, right? I don't think it was the one the goalkeeper saved out for a corner. So somebody just body checks him as they run by
him.
So I think it was a reaction to that. I think if you're a fan and somebody comes on and runs about and gives you great energy and the angles, I mean, the finishes he scored cut off the bench the first couple of games were sublime. Really great instinctive finishing, you know, not to put pressure on the boy, but if you're talking about a guy coming off his bench in the debut and finishing like that, you're thinking back to Cadet. Such an instinctive finish, and he's maybe kind of missed a couple of one-on-ones since then. But they've all been close, and they've all been.
And he is only 18. I think there's a tendency to forget that he's still. I know the phrase always used these days is "work in progress," but I mean he's still a raw boy, and to a degree.
I think the problem with that is as well. We'll get some of the young boys we've got look like big men. Aya, Sham, even Edward,
Burke as well.
You know, they are. You kind of think. And you're saying
the big units,
whether Burke's maybe slightly older but not played the amount of games, or they are, you know, youngsters, and youngsters come to a different country and settling in and dealing with new teammates, and let's be honest, it's a very different type of pressure you'll get at Celtic than you will get at most teams. Maybe PSG are thinking, yeah, they've got a pressure to win games, so there might be an argument of sending players to us for the mentality. He's not coming to Scotland to learn how to get kicked by Ricky Foster. But you know, there's maybe that element to it. He's been great, and again, you know, as kind of people say, don't fall in love with loan players and don't get excited by it.
Well, we'll go into that in a wee minute, because we're going to touch the loan players, but let's just finish off with Bio. Have they seen anything of Bio yet, other than a cameo appearance right at the very end? But I was actually surprised how it struck me immediately how big he is.
Yeah, I think nowadays you're probably. Players need to have pace and power. Is that the right term to use nowadays? I don't think it's been pulled up a few times. But in a competitive league like Scotland, we do need players who will stand up and get stuck in. I mean, a couple of games recently, I mean, obviously Ryan Christie has bulked up considerably from two seasons ago, even a season ago. But there's still a few times, Valencia and on Sunday at Rugby Park, he was getting brushed off at times, and you know, it wasn't a foul, it was just kind of that's how we play the game in Scotland. So we need that again, you know. Bale, I think maybe people were just anxious at that point. You had to just get somebody else on, change it slightly, do something.
Right.
He could have been on earlier,
but I think he should have been on earlier. There you go, you're right, he did win the corner that the goal came through,
so that's great. I mean, we probably, I mean, it's worked out okay in the end. I'm not going to lose sleep about hindsight looking back in rugby.
So the four players we signed, three of them are loans.
Yep.
Right. And there's also a couple of guys who they've signed but loaned them back out again. Is it Sven?
Yep. Sven.
And the two American guys.
Yep.
So they're again using the phrase work in progress. They're ones for the future. So is the elephant in the room, and I'm not being controversial here, I'm asking this in all seriousness, is the elephant in the room now that Celtic are not signing players for the future in that transfer window because they're holding on to the money, possibly because Brendan might not be there in the summer?
It's possibly a factor. I mean, I think if there was nothing else, you know, if the incidents from the summer window and the fallout of that, mm-hmm. and the rumour and the innuendo, I mean, I'm not in the know in any way, shape or form. So I'm like everybody else, I'm looking for people who claim to be in the know, or you kind of trust.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we've kind of discussed before, too many people seem to be suggesting that something's not right,
mm-hmm.
or that he is fully off, or that he has spoke to clubs, or at least intimated mm-hmm. he'd be willing to speak to clubs. So there is that. But I mean, there is an element of the January window. Don't always sound like Peter Lobel trotting out the usual line, we've not done business. It's a harder window. I think the stats back that
nobody
up.
Nobody wants to lose, even teams at the bottom of the league that don't want to lose their best players because they might be fighting relegation and stuff like that. Nobody wants to lose good players in January.
I think even in the super duper English mm-hmm. Premier League and the money they can spend, mm-hmm. I think even the proportion of loan deals is a lot higher in January.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get that. You know, when you're talking about, we're talking about Ollie Burke and his reputation, and I mean, is it two separate deals of at least over 10 million?
That's right.
We couldn't hope to get a player like that.
Yeah.
It's paying a transfer fee and paying the wages you'd expect a player.
Well, we've done well for loans in the past. You can go back to Craig Bellamy, who came in at a time and gave us a lift. And, you know, I don't think there's any doubt Craig Bellamy, in the 6 months he was with us, was a class act.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's an element of, yes, we should be concerned that we're only kicking a can down the road, but I'd rather have that than not kicking a can at all. We've still got a league to win here.
You know,
we've still got a Scottish Cup to win.
Well, the most impressive thing for me is that the certainly three of the guys out the four that we've talked about have come in and immediately done us a turn.
Yeah,
and I think that there's two things that they raised the spirit of the supporters, and they also raised the spirit of the team. Because you could see guys like Callum McGregor and James Forrest responding to the, and it's, I don't think it's any coincidence Sinclair's form's took a wee upturn, because he's had quite a disappointing season, maybe up till Christmas,
I think,
and since the new year, he looked as if he was getting his mojo back.
It was something I read, and I apologise if I've taken somebody's quote that they spent a lot of time thinking about, but has the upturn in Sinclair's form been because he's now more confident in the players around him, or the players are working harder and making more runs for him?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Sinclair, I mean, it's very easy to write off as just a confidence thing.
Could have been done to increase competition as well, because he knows now there's two guys in the bench who'll take his place.
Well, hopefully. I mean, again, I mean, if we go back to the Doris de Vries signing, and, you know, I don't think many people are going to look back that fondly, but that signing gave Craig Gordon a good kick up the backside, and it pushed Craig Gordon onto a height that he hadn't reached in a while
previously.
For us.
Yeah.
You know, so whilst the actual individual signing of Doris de Vries, the player, hasn't worked out for us, his capture,
it inspired Gordon to better performances.
So I'm fine with that. And again, if some of the players are brought in, you know, not to all be pining for Patrick Roberts, but at times where, you know, James Forrest play, it's been brilliant.
Well,
you sort of think, even the past 2 years, where the two of them were competing, they were pushing each other on.
That's right.
And again, I like James Forrest. I think he does a lot for the team. I think he's been a great player this season. He's maybe kind of tailed off a wee bit, but he's playing a lot of games. Wingers are normally inconsistent.
Yeah.
And he was running to the ground because we didn't have somebody switching the ball. So it's not even a case of, you know, if you have somebody and they'll keep you on your toes, they'll keep you going, but it also means that somebody can say, we'll sit you out for two games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mikey Johnson's done well enough for, again, his age and some of the situations he's been dropped into. The boy Morgan, I think, unfortunately, if you come to Celtic and you get an injury in pre-season, it makes it really hard for you.
Yeah, that was a blow, because apparently he was playing well in pre-season.
Yep.
So, and he was hopefully ready to
I'm not sure about that. I mean, a part of me think if Jack Ross has stayed at St Mirren, we might have been better to give him 6 months.
Yeah,
at
St Mirren.
At St Mirren to stay there. But equally, I think Celtic have signed you.
Well, the hope now, is that he goes down to Sunderland and does what Ryan Christie did at Aberdeen.
Yeah.
Comes back bulked up, a better player and wiser for the experience. Now, the winning goal at Kilmarnock, right, was there's a lot in common with the Tom Rogic goal.
Not in Finnish.
Three years ago. I know that. But the late winner, the last minute winner, was there. In your opinion, did you see it coming, or had you given up? Subconsciously, maybe even given up.
Yeah, I mean, I never really give up. But you know, certain times when you're singing "I'll Walk a Million Miles for One of Your Goals," sometimes you really mean it. Sometimes you're belting it out. Sometimes you're just plodding along with it. Again, well, let's be honest. I mean, the St Johnstone game was a late-ish winner or late goals.
Yeah.
But we hadn't really done that in a while. There's been a lot of games where maybe we were losing or we're drawing, and you're sort of thinking, right, this is the time we step it up, and it's not happened. I think obviously the sending off gave us an impetus. It gives the crowd life again. The subs came on and were making a run. But Kilmarnock under Steve Clark are very good at killing games and just kind of the wasting time.
They're the best organised team in the league, and I mean that as
they
play
their strengths, absolutely,
because the half of that Kilmarnock team I wouldn't know if they passed me by in the street.
No,
but the difference that man has made getting there and turning them into a unit who work hard for each other. And the only thing I would say in a negative side to Kilmarnock is that they lack a bit of punch up front.
Yeah,
I think if they had that, see if they had the right decent goal scorer, then it would really be interesting, because they just seem a bit light up front.
Yeah, I think even kind of, I mean, I wouldn't have said at the start of the season
nah.
The boy Stewart would have scored as many goals from that he did, and obviously losing him. But I just kind of had in the back of my mind that they might just kill this game dead. We'll not be out, not in a paranoid way, we'll not be able to get a sense of momentum here, because they'll just slow the game down. Anything the ball goes wide, the goalie's going to take 2 minutes. Absolutely.
Somebody made a point to me before the game, and I took notice of it during the game, was every time Kilmarnock get a shy or a corner kick, it's at least 20 seconds they're calling out the game.
Because
they're kicking the ball away, and again, that's no criticism against them per se, because it's a professional game and they're there to get a result. They're paid for a performance. But it's only when it was pointed out to me, and I took notice of it, that the goalkeeper taking by kicks, even taking corner kicks, were taking ages to get a corner kick to come in. It's almost as if they were hoping to bore us into losing concentration and then swing it in.
It's possibly just, it stops us getting momentum. I mean, again, you know, you've got a keeper doing that in the first 10 minutes of a game, it's probably not time wasting, but it's stopping us getting into a rhythm as much. Obviously it does waste time. I mean, we were in the Moffat on Sunday. That's not my defence. Admittedly, I'm not in the park, we're in the Moffat. And you could see it, in the start of the second half, there was a couple of the shies that Burke was taking the corners, and just the whole thing just stopped, and you're looking up at the clock on the opposite stand, and
you see it running down.
You're counting times, and I think obviously the ball boys were instructed to walk with the ball and then almost hand it to the person. There's some times where I wish maybe in Europe we were a bit more savvy.
Well, somebody made that point to me as well. How can Rodgers not put a team out in the shape that Steve Clark does and at least avoid 7 goal thrashings? You know, just you might keep it down to 2 or 3, but at least that's respectable.
Yeah, I mean, it's a couple of different things. I think it's okay to respect Brendan Rodgers for trying to have a style of play, and to have that in every game. But
the other thing as well is we've got a certain tradition for playing football a certain way, and the supporters don't necessarily want to see that. Although I think we are pragmatic enough when we go away in Europe to try and shut up shop. Now, we can't mention Kilmarnock without mentioning, first of all, we had flares, and then we had seats being broken, apparently, whether it's accidentally or on purpose. And then the wee mini pitch invasion when Brown ran to the fans. So what's your take on that?
By and large, I'm not too concerned with that. And I'll be honest, and this probably get people annoyed with me here, the only stuff the fans did on Sunday that I'm not too happy about is throwing a coin at Chris Boyd.
Yeah, the coin thrown.
And do we need to sing that song about Chris Boyd? You know, there's plenty of stuff to get at people. I mean, I'm really tight. I can't afford to throw coins at footballers.
I know.
But I don't get the mentality of it. But for the other stuff, flares, you know, I mean, I go to the game with my dad. My dad's in his 70s. If we're getting some of the away games, certainly at the Dundee United in the Shed, we happen to be in the middle of it. And flares, I mean, I'm maybe hypocritical. They're exciting. I do think they add a colour. I like, you know, the noise goes. But I get a lot of people really dislike them. I get that. And again,
especially if you're up close to it though.
I mean, you know, it's sulphur. It smells terrible. You know, I get, and you know, I worry because a friend of the family had got a chest condition. And he stopped going to a lot of the away games because he couldn't know.
Couldn't take the risk.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be a bad health thing for the soap. You know, part of me does say, yeah, they look great, it's exciting, I like the noise. And then, but a part of me thinks, if there's a safer way to do it, or I would love for Celtic to be able to say, we'll never be able to do it, because it would go against kind of the rules and regulations of the grounds, and we'd be admitting we've got problems. But Celtic to sell, here's a section where everybody can stand and go mad, here's a section where people can sit down. You know, I think I'd enjoy that. As for the seats, yeah, I mean, it doesn't look great, the images, but if you actually look at the image, it's quite clearly caused by a surge.
Forward. Yeah. It's no people jumping up and doing the seats. It's the backs of the seats that were getting broken rather than the actual seat itself.
To hark back to a previous time where maybe the behaviour was called into question, the Friday night game at Far Park, there was quite clearly individual seats broken as an act of vandalism that night. You know, I'm sure it probably started some accidentally because you know it was a crowded area, but you know what it's like, sometimes one or two goes and then it's just like, aye, somebody will jump, I'll do it, and blah blah blah. What happened at Kilmarnock, I think, was accidental. Celtic will pay the bill.
I think it was spur of the moment as well. The goal goes in, the dramatic
relief,
winner,
everything.
It's the whole emotional roller coaster, if you like.
Yeah, as you say, I mean, again, Brown comes to the crowd, he stops, then the players behind them celebrating bump into Brown and take Brown
Push further forward.
And again with that as well, I mean, you know, it's also happening more and more now, and it's happening across the board. I mean, it's not for me, but again, equally you're sort of thinking, oh, there's been times we've done that before, or people spill over, and the excitement, the drama, and nobody wants to take that away from football.
Is it not a case though, if they don't want to be compared to the Huns, we should stop behaving like Huns?
But they didn't start. We didn't invent it. You know, the teams do it all the time.
No, I'm talking about the B-mini pitch invasion thing. We're ripping it out of them the last two seasons, and yet we go and do it ourselves, which I don't think is.
Part of me is quite like the mental gymnastics some people have had to justify it being okay for us, not being okay for them. I don't worry about it too much. You know, I mean, yeah, we can wind them up about it, because ultimately the games they did them in. Weren't doing it. I mean, ideally you don't, but equally you don't want to get to a situation where you just turn around to the person next to you and shake their hand as though it's mass.
I know.
You know, it was a game that was torrid. It was just relief, if nothing else.
You're right, it was pure spontaneous relief.
No, we've had games like that. I mean, there must be kind of, I'm trying to kind of think back, ultimately games that didn't matter. There was an early game in the season we didn't stop them getting 9 in a row. We won 2-1 late on at Tannadice. So Malcolm McKay
get a winner in injury time.
You know,
there'd be no Tanna Windy that night day in the press box. And
Dundee United all the kind of glass bits.
Yeah.
And it was just bedlam. And again, it's just people getting carried away. And kind of, I mean, I think there's certain things nowadays. I don't want to blame it on social media, but I think social media brings it to a fore. There's more a me atmosphere now, where people are saying, I'm going to go on the pitch and celebrate with the players, or I'm going to do this. Well, I'm just like, I'm just delighted to have won.
Yeah,
it's just great. Again, my only issue is, and people can tell me to shut up, because that's their right to do. I say, I'll go to the games with my dad. He's in his 70s now. He's not where he used to be.
He might want to sit rather than stand as well.
He might want to sit and stand, but we're kind of saying his legs couldn't take that. If there's a surge like
I know.
Depends where we sit or where we're on the game. I mean, again, you remember Lennon's first full season away to St Mirren.
Gary Hooper
scored an injury time. We lost midweek to Hearts.
And again,
it looked as though it was going to be 0-0 injury time score. And we're on the front row, and obviously Hooper scores and he comes to your side, and people are just pushing past him. And I'm trying to go mad myself, because absolutely delighted we've won, but I'm also trying to keep him upright.
Yeah.
And, you know, what are we, about 8-9 years on since then?
I know.
You know, and it's hard, because obviously, when something goes like that, it's the heat of the moment. Not that you can justify stupid or behaviour that puts other people at risk, but you're not always thinking straight.
No, you're not always thinking rational when something like that happens, that's for sure.
So it's hard to say, and I'd be the last person to take fun and enjoyment out of football, because I take a lot of fun and enjoyment out of my life.
The one thing I would say is, like, I remember being in 100,000 crowds occasionally, but when I was a boy at Hampden, and that was quite scary, because, you know, you've got that big massive terracing behind the Celtic end, and just the heaving mass of bodies when Celtic scored.
I mean, for me, I mean, it's more kind of games in the late 80s, leaving Tynecastle on Easter Road and your feet not on the ground, just being swept away by people. You know, my dad talks about the time, you know, the Elland Road game. He was pretty much near the back of the terracing when George Conley scored. 2 minutes later, he's in the he's at the wall at the front, just because the amount of movement and in the parlance of the President's Day, it's scenes, limbs, and, you know, you kind of look at, I mean, one of the best pictures you'll ever see of Celtic is George McCloskey's celebrating
the 80 Cup final.
It's a picture, and you look at it,
he jumps about 3 foot in the air.
He's about 3 foot in the air, but the Celtic end looks as though it's moving in the picture.
That's right.
And, you know, again, you can just imagine, I mean, that was maybe people having their last ounce of energy before heat exhaustion in extra time that day. So I don't want to kind of say it's just a modern thing, because I think if we all look back, you know, talk about Love Street, you know, kind of, that was a really good pitch invasion that day. There's certain days
I think that was merited, but if you win the league, you think you're entitled to run in the picture. Or, as long as it's in a good ball gesture, if you like, you're not running on to fight end, you're not running on aggressively.
Which was plenty of that in the 70s as well. I mean, you know what it's like,
it's not
nowadays.
Being done.
Everything's big, everything's intense, everything's magnified. And just the way the weekend panned out, just the relief of it. I mean, you know, people were thinking, right, that's the league done. I think now we're calmed down a bit. We're all getting back to sort of saying, well, hold on here, let's see how the next three or four games pan out. We'll play
get a sensible head back on again.
Yeah, but at that moment in time.
Yeah, it's definitely worth celebrating, going 8 points in front of them. So we're speaking here, and tomorrow night we're in Valencia, and I deliberately didn't concentrate in the Valencia home game, because it was games like that, frankly, are a bit best forgotten. But do you hold any hope tomorrow night? What's your hopes?
You know, if we go there and get 3 quick goals, you never know. No, I mean, I don't think so. I think everyone is. We'll hope. We'll certainly be getting there.
I think if we're going to do it, it would be really interesting if we scored first, because that really puts the cat amongst the pigeons, in as much as Valencia at that point might think, well, what do we do here? Do we twist our stick? Do we attack to kill them off, or do we defend and hold what we've got?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I don't want to sound as though I'm criticising Brendan Rodgers, but I think some of the times where we've been in that position where we're not sure whether to attack or defend, we get caught in two minds.
It
could hit them, you know, and
it's a pity it wasn't a 1-goal lead, because at 1-0 that there's still a wee glint of hope. But I think when the second goal went in, it's difficult to see a way back for that.
At this point in time, my plan is to work away as normal. And about half an hour before the game, right, laptop off, quietly settle down, and hope. You know, as you say, if we get the first goal, that all changes.
That's right.
It'll be running down the street if it goes 2-0. I'm not expecting it. And, you know, hopefully, when time is aired, people can say, hey, you got it wrong, we're through to the next round. Trust me, nobody will be happier about that than me. But at this point,
I think if they put up a good fight and a good performance, most of would be happy with that, you know.
Part of me is kind of thinking, just no injuries.
Well, that's the thing as well, because
for players as well,
I've never known a season like this with injuries. It's just been one curse after another.
I think there's now, players are playing a lot of games. I mean, that's kind of now certainly 2 of the 3 seasons, if not the 3 seasons, there's been stats in December and January highlighting a Celtic player has played the most minutes in Europe.
I know. But I think this season it's McGregor, isn't it?
McGregor. Tierney was definitely
last
one.
Last season, that's right.
You know, so it's like, we're playing a lot of games, we're playing high intensity stuff. And again, we're maybe kind of saying, we've got a big squad, but you don't trust the squad. So we need maybe
I think it's noticeable, before Christmas, the bench looked weak. I mean, the a couple of times you're looking at the bench, and with all due respect, you're thinking there's nothing there. And if it's an emergency here, yeah, and you need to rely on anybody, there's not a lot there to come on. Whereas now you look at the bench, because we've brought in a considerable number of new players in the window, and you think to yourself, we're back in that good position where he's got options,
yeah,
to bring people on.
Absolutely. I mean, that should be the area where the money we've earned makes a difference. You know, if games aren't going our way, we can make a change, and we can totally change the shape and style. I mean, obviously, the one game we kind of rushed Edward back and even put him on the bench, was it Pittodrie? And he turned that game for us.
He did.
It was quite a hat trick, but we ran that
ball. He turned the game that day. There's no doubt about it, Edward.
And as you say, I mean, again, you've got to look back, and Mikey Johnston done tremendous for us in a few games we get to run. You know, ask him, a 17-year-old boy to play centre forward for the club.
I know.
And it's probably not fair on him.
No, and it's not his position. It's not his natural position, certainly.
But he did very well. You know,
he did, but the hope is that we don't need to play him in that position again.
Yeah.
No, because he's a bad player, but it's because it's not his natural game.
I'm sure he'll say, like Evans, he'll play any position if given the chance.
That's it.
And that's the way it should be, but you can do, sometimes you can do more damage to players by doing that. But yeah, I mean, we should be doing it. We'll see about the injuries. I mean, people talk about, what are we doing at Lennox Town? Are we doing the wrong things? Or is it just the fact that, you know, football is faster, it's harder nowadays, and we play a lot more games. And even when our, you know, other teams' players get a chance to get a break, all our squads go and play international football. You know, I was thinking, like, last season, by Christmas time, Kieran Tierney had played more games than a Partick Thistle defender would play over the course of the entire season.
I know, it's amazing when you think of the League Cup, Champions League, international games, at high standard friendlies as well that we play.
All games where you've got to be at your best, got to be on.
So the hope is the more of them, but we'll keep our fingers crossed, and that'll be us. So that brings us to the end then. Just to say thanks very much for joining us, and by the time this gets out, probably the Valencia score is obviously going to be known, so the you and I are both crossing our fingers, hoping for the best. But absolutely, thanks for taking part with the podcast, and all the best for the future.
Thank you very much, hope everyone enjoyed that. Thank you. Bring me
sunshine in your smile. So as Andy said, I hope everyone enjoyed that. I'm trying to get this out before the Motherwell game today. Hopefully we'll obviously continue our winning run at Celtic Park in domestic games for this season and move forward for the Holy Trinity of three trebles in a row. Anyway, more podcasts along soon, recording with Lackey Moore next week. This is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.